This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, February 20th, 2013. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we talk to a documentarian about his film that chronicles the life of the godmother of rock and roll, Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Plus, we get an update on the progress of the Marshalls Museum in Fort Smith, learn about a competition that shines the spotlight on entrepreneurship in Arkansas, and more.
But first, Governor Mike Beebe says he thinks lawmakers are getting closer to a decision on whether to proceed with an expansion of the state's Medicaid program. Earlier this week, House Majority Leader Bruce Westerman told reporters that leaders in the House and Senate are planning to hire an independent consultant to assess the state's current Medicaid program before they make a decision on expanding it with the federal health care law. Beebe told reporters yesterday an outside opinion is a good idea.
Double check the figures. Get your own people. Either get the Bureau or any outside consultants you want to get. You know, the only caution I'd give them is do it fast. I mean, don't do something that takes a couple of months. I mean, I hope they're out of here by the end of March, 1st of April.
Beebe, who has said he is for expanding Medicaid, says the 3/4 vote necessary to approve it will be tough. The governor is scheduled to travel to Washington, D.C. at the end of this week to speak with U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Kathleen Sebelius about the state's expansion options.
The Arkansas House Public Health Committee yesterday approved Senator Jason Raper's bill to ban abortions after 12 weeks. It's now been amended to include exceptions to the ban for lethal fetal disorders and to remove a part of the bill that made it a felony for a doctor to perform an abortion after 12 weeks outside the exemptions of the law. The Conway Republican says the bill has enough support that it might be able to withstand a veto from the governor.
Obviously, he has the right to veto legislation, but I believe that the votes that put it on his desk are the same votes that would be needed to override a veto, but I hope it doesn't come to that. The governor has been in the Senate, and he usually respects the will of the legislature, and I hope he will respect the will on this bill.
Governor Mike Beebe has said he has significant concerns about the constitutionality of the bill. Speaking yesterday about the 12-week ban and another abortion bill, the governor said he may have his mind made up on whether he'll sign, but he's not saying yet.
These folks need to vote up or down without necessarily any cover from me. They need to vote the way they want to vote, and they will. And then I'll do what I think is appropriate.
With both abortion bills passed out of the House committee yesterday, the governor may reveal his decision later this week after the bills are voted on in the House.
Arkansas now has a beefed-up statute designed to deal with human trafficking offenses after the governor signed the Human Trafficking Act of 2013 into law yesterday morning. The bill will exempt victims of human trafficking from being prosecuted from prostitution, and it makes penalties harsher for human traffickers. One of the bill's sponsors, Republican Representative Missy Irvin of Mountain View, says the bill will help the fight against human trafficking in Arkansas.
The most important part of the bill is that it strengthens the penalties, and it really puts some meat and some teeth into the law now, and it gives law enforcement the tools and the prosecutors the tools that they need to really fully go after the folks in human trafficking and prosecute it to the fullest degree.
The law also allows the state attorney general to establish a task force to prevent human trafficking for reasons involving both labor and sex.
The Benton County Quorum Court has a new member today. Ray Hernandez was appointed yesterday to the governing body's District 2 seat, which covers the swath of land south of East New Hope and east of Old Wire Roads in Rogers. The appointment to the court is noticeable because Ray Hernandez is the first person of Hispanic descent to be appointed to a quorum court in northwest Arkansas.
I think anytime you have representation for a group that is underrepresented, it gives them an opportunity to, first of all, have a voice about their concerns. So my expectations are that, you know, I will be probably the one person that some of our Hispanic community will feel comfortable coming to and discussing their concerns. Of course, knowing that, you know, I'm only one out of 15 votes.
He is the Vice Provost for Diversity at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, and he has lived in Benton County for 24 years, giving him, he says, perspective on the rapid growth in the county in recent years. He says as the Hispanic population grows in the county, the representation of that segment of the population should grow as well. He says he views his constituency not only as a Hispanic, but also as a veteran, a rancher, a businessman, a grandfather, and as a student. He is currently pursuing his master's degree at the University of Arkansas.
The Fayetteville City Council last night voted to delay awarding a design contract for restoration of two historic bridges in the downtown area. The decision to table the item came after a debate about semantics. The proposed contract referred to the project as a rehabilitation. City resident Paula Marinoni, who has been involved with other projects involving historic structures, objected to the use of that word.
And rehabilitation, even if it starts out with restoring, is not the same as restoration. And not once in 41 pages did it say the word restoration, which means that there is not an understanding of what is to take place.
The council voted unanimously to table the item until its next meeting in order to review the contract and iron out any questions of appropriate word usage. Mayor Lionel Jordan says that he has worked on this project for 3.5 years and that waiting 2 weeks wouldn't make that much of a difference.
Razorback baseball team had a good day yesterday, though they did have to battle temperatures dropping into the mid-30s by the end of a doubleheader. The Diamond Hogs swept New Orleans, winning 14-0 in the first game, 3-0 in the second. The team returns to Baum Stadium Friday to open a 3-game weekend series against Evansville.
There's a chance of snow, sleet, and freezing rain with lows around 30 degrees tonight. Less than an inch of accumulation is expected. Tomorrow, expect periods of rain and freezing rain early, switching to rain before noon, and highs from the upper 30s to the lower 40s. And tomorrow night, expect mostly cloudy skies with lows from 23 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 30 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley. Earlier this week, the U.S. Marshals Museum in Fort Smith got a little closer to its goal of raising $50 million thanks to a $200,000 donation. Earlier this morning, I spoke with Vice President of Museum Operations Jessica Hayes to find out how administrators feel about where they are now.
We've really made a lot of good progress. We're past the $10 million mark, working towards that $50 million goal, and we're in the midst of a campaign throughout Arkansas, but we're also ramping up to start our national campaign over the next couple of months. This is a national museum, so we've always known that we would raise money on a national level. We've made some great strides.
And we've been talking about monetary donations, but I understand that you've been getting donations of artifacts that will be used in the museum. What are some of the things you've gotten, and what are you planning on doing with them?
Well, we've gotten some cool things. We've been not actively collecting at this point since we don't have the proper storage facilities, but we have gotten some wonderful things. We received a gun and badge and a set of bullets that belonged to Bass Reeves, who, of course, is a well-known deputy from this area. His great nephew made the donation, and it's actually on display right now at the Rogers Historical Museum as part of one of the exhibits that they have up on Law and Order. And then last year, we received a few artifacts from a former deputy, Mr. Al Butler. Al actually died a few months after he gave us the artifacts, so it was a very timely donation. But he gave us his helmet that he wore during the integration of Ole Miss in 1962, which was when James Meredith became the first African-American student. It was a very violent event. And so we have his helmet. He gave us a riot baton and an armband that he wore during the Pentagon riot. And then he gave us the original jumpsuits that the Special Operations Group wore back in the 70s. So we'll have a nice variety. Randomly, yesterday in the mail, a former deputy from Alaska sent us a set of transcripts from one of the last cases in Alaska in which the Marshal Service actually did the investigation. So we're going to cover a wide range of topics.
Well, that's nice that you've been able to get some of these artifacts donated even without asking.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, with a long-term project like this, how do you balance the excitement of getting donations like the monetary or the artifacts, like you said, the random transcript that you received from Alaska? How do you balance the excitement of that with, you know, reminding people that this is a long-term project and, you know, it's not going to happen tomorrow?
Well, one of the things that we've really been focused on doing is a variety of different programs. And one of the ways that I think that's beneficial is it also reminds people that while stuff is great and going to a building, you know, and looking at things is fun, it's really about the programs and the stories. And so we've done a number of things. We did a great program in New Orleans a couple of years ago to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the school integration. We've got several things lined up over the next couple of months. And then meanwhile, we're constantly working with teachers from the region and students to teach them more about the museum and more about this aspect of our history.
And in a couple of weeks, you guys have I believe, a flagpole dedication. Can you tell me a little bit about that event?
We do. Smith Auto Group, which is a local auto company, donated a 114-foot flagpole to the museum. And so with the help of a number of other companies and individuals, the flagpole was moved to our property on the river. And on March the 5th at 11, we will be doing a dedication of the flagpole. We'll have the Marshal Service and a number of other people present. It's really the perfect spot for it, too, because, like I said, it's right on the river, and you can see it from all over downtown. So we'll be doing that dedication. It'll last about 20 minutes. But we're really excited because it, you know, it marks the spot of our property.
More information is available at usmarshalsmuseum.com.
Sister Rosetta Tharpe was a blues, gospel, and rock and roll pioneer. She meshed secular musical styles with a gospel message like nobody before her. And she unleashed an electric guitar sound that predates the rock and roll revolution by more than a decade. Born in Cotton Plant, Arkansas, she became a star around the world. Friday night, a documentary about her will premiere on PBS at 9. The director of the American Masters episode titled Sister Rosetta Tharpe, the godmother of rock and roll, is Mick Charkey. Last week, I talked to him from his apartment in London.
I first became aware of Sister Rosetta Tharpe through a radio program. I think it was the BBC World Service. I was sitting in bed late at night. I heard an interview taking place between a BBC interviewer and someone called Gail Wald, who'd just written a book called Shout, Sister Shout, The Untold Story of the Rock and Roll Trailblazer, Sister Rosetta Tharpe. Now, I wasn't really listening very attentively at the start, but suddenly I sat up with such a shock. I heard a clip of Sister Rosetta singing Up Above My Head.
Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Up above my head, there is music in the air. Up above my head, music in the air. And I really do believe,
and it was quite late at night, actually, and I jumped out of bed, I went to my computer, and I looked her up, and, you know, I'd never heard of her before. I know many, many people had, but I hadn't. And I spent the night literally finding out everything I could about her, and became absolutely entranced by the video clips, the film clips that I found, the photographs, and what some of the people said about her. I think it was when Bob Dylan said she was one of the most important influences in the 20th century on popular music, that I really jumped, and I felt as a documentary filmmaker who kind of has to look for what resonates with the public, what resonates with me initially, I felt this was a heck of a story. So I found myself writing it up before I went back to bed. I wrote it up, and in the morning I sent it to the BBC and said, please give me some money to get started on a wonderful film. And within a month, I was in Baltimore interviewing one of her oldest friends.
You know, I think for those of us who discovered her after her death, so many have a similar sort of story that you first hear about her or first hear her, and then I wouldn't say become obsessed, but it's close. You can't believe this figure existed and you didn't know about her.
Well, I'd so agree. I mean, I've made a few films about African-American music. I've enjoyed a long sort of period of African American historical influences, right through jazz, blues, soul, making portraits of people like Bob Marley, and more. And there was something that seemed, nevertheless, incredibly fresh about her, and yet somehow familiar. And I think there is a familiarity because she influenced so many people from way back, from the late 30s, early 40s onwards. That so much of her music sort of exists through other people's music, but as a result of the way they interpret her.
Well, what's amazing about her is her ability to mix secular sounds with gospel music and that wonderful voice and wonderful guitar. She's quite, unique.
Well, spot on. I think you've hit it. She's a combination of a very warm person singing with a very warm, entertaining voice, but that sort of showbiz swagger of the guitar, that real sort of Eric Clapton, Jimi Hendrix, Pete Townsend, and more sort of swagger of her own style, the way she hits the newly electrified guitar, I think made her just that bridge between church music and secular music, as you say.
And of course, as people might expect, for some, she was a beloved figure in music for breaking down boundaries. Others rejected, thought that she was mixing things that should not be put together.
Well, she went through a bad patch in the late 30s when she made that jump to the Cotton Club to recording some pretty saucy music. I mean, some of the lyrics of songs that she was employed to sing when she was very young, and I think not very knowing, she was singing songs like 4 or 5 times a night, I will please my man, sort of lyrics, and all I want is a tall, skinny popper, which is a rather unambiguous message, I think, which caused a great deal of grief for people in the world of gospel. But I think when she came to her senses a little, she found she could please both audiences without offending either audience. And really, that was by putting all her energies into gospel music, but giving it that popular showbiz oomph, that magic that she'd learned as someone who was hugely attracted to the popular audience, to the applause, to getting really, enthusiastic feedback in places like the Cotton Club.
You know, you mentioned that Bob Dylan cites her as an influential figure. You look at the earliest people associated with what we call rock and roll, Jerry Lee Lewis, Little Richard, Elvis Presley, they all sing her praises. There are some music historians that say, you know what, rock and roll is right there at the feet of her song Strange Things Happening Every Day, one of, if not the first record you could call perhaps what becomes rock and roll.
Church people say they are in this holy way. There are strange things happening every day. On that last great judgment day, when they drive them all away, there are strange things happening every day.
What completely flummoxed me in my early researches was her absence from the great Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Why isn't she there? And I guess if I had one overriding ambition for this film, it would be to see her inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It may be a bit late, but my goodness, she should be there. And I think it would be hugely satisfying to feel that through the great sort of value of radio and television, that people get to know more about her and therefore sort of support that idea and root for her as soon as possible.
You know, in the documentary, there is archival, not just audio, but footage of her, and there's a great clip of her playing. I think it's from the mid-60s, singing Didn't It Rain?
That's one of my favorite moments in the film, and it was extraordinary the way it was constructed. Granada Television in Britain discovered that she was coming on a tour to Britain with Muddy Waters, and they concocted the most extraordinary cliche of taking a disused railway station and dressing it up like a sort of Southern States railway station from the US of A, complete with goats and horses and barrels and rocking chairs and goodness knows what. And it happened to be pouring with rain. The day they went to shoot this on television. It was pouring with rain, all over the guitars, all over the piano, all over everybody, all over the audience. And yet, appropriately, she stood up and sang, "Didn't It Rain," referring to Noah's Ark and it brought the house down. People absolutely adored it, and that really was what brought her to the attention of a big audience in Britain, who took her very much to their hearts.
Well, you know, when you hear the description of the video, and she's wearing this sort of, you know, not matronly, but a heavy coat, and she's walking with this electric guitar, it sounds like it should be completely cheesy. Instead, it's completely mesmerizing.
Didn't it rain, children? You know it did, didn't it? Oh, yes, how it rained. I said it rained, children. Rain, oh, yes, didn't it? Yes, didn't it? You know it did, didn't it? Oh, my Lord, how it rained.
I guess the way to sum her up, because after I read the biography, Shout, Sister, Shout, someone asked me who had never heard of her. I said, she just seems to be, of all the people I've ever read about, have this innate sense of that rough patch, notwithstanding you mentioned the 30s, of knowing show business, where it should end, and where genuine artistry should begin, and just had this presence, both visually and on record.
Exactly. I mean, I'm wary of too much sort of homegrown psychoanalysis or whatever. But, you know, she was a little girl, keen to please. She was addicted to praise and recognition right from an early age. She lost her father. She lost her father because her mother took her away, took her on the road somewhat to exploit her talent, as many, many people did exploit her talent. Her mother took her north to Chicago, where by the age of six she was singing in church, standing on the piano, playing the guitar, and holding crowds spellbound. And I think that is a bit of an addiction. And she couldn't stop. She couldn't stop, and it gave her the sort of strength to play right on through pretty severe illness. I mean, in older age, once she was diagnosed with diabetes, I mean, she had one of her legs removed, but she was still on stage, sometimes in a wheelchair, sometimes propped up on a stool, playing for audiences, all of which I'm told, and sadly I never saw one, but all of which I'm told were incredibly emotional events in everybody's lives. Her life, no less, but the audiences, for sure.
And finally, for a documentary filmmaker, was there anything you really wanted to find that eluded you?
That eluded me?
Yeah.
Well, I think meeting her. I mean, I without doubt, I fell in love with her right from early on, and it became more and more of an addiction. I found her such a wonderful person. I would love to have met her. I would love to have found more footage of her. I guess what did elude me was, to be serious, what really did elude me was there wasn't a lot of film of her. There were the early sort of jukebox shoots of her singing those songs like Tall Skinny Papa and Lonesome Road, which you'll see in the film when she was in her early 20s. But we couldn't find nowhere, any footage of her in the late 30s, early 40s, when she was at her absolute prime. And although we've got some great photographs, and I think we evoke it well with the use of the wonderful music and a lot of lovely photographs, but it would have been just great to have found film of her performing in those days. What we had recourse to do in the end was to use footage of her in the 50s, 60s, 70s to evoke that period, I guess, when she really broke in the early 40s. But I'd love to have found more of that, and maybe if there's anybody out there with film, I think it's a treasure for the nation to be sort of preserved, if it could be found. But I kind of have a feeling that we looked as hard as we could and we couldn't find it.
Mick Charkey is the Emmy Award-winning director of the new documentary, Sister Rosetta Tharpe, the Godmother of Rock and Roll. The American Masters episode airs Friday night at 9 on AETN in Arkansas and most PBS stations. Mick spoke with me from his apartment in London last week.
Nothing funny in the news? Think again. But still, Winter Storm Plato. Kid you not, a platonic weather event. What is that? You name puppies, you don't name this kind of stuff. Anyhow, the Weather Channel is forbidden to use Winter Storm Feldman. Join me this week for all the news that isn't and more on the What Do You Know Radio Hour from PRI, Public Radio International.
The What Do You Know Hour with Michael Feldman, Saturday morning at 10 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Question. Do you have your brackets ready for March Madness? I'm not talking about basketball, but business. The Arkansas Capital Corporation Group is hosting its first ever Battle of the Brands contest designed to highlight entrepreneurship in Arkansas. Mike Steele with the Arkansas Capital Corporation recently spoke with Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas about this upcoming contest.
This is the first year this actually comes to us from our technology partner, U.S. SourceLink, which is part of the Kauffman Foundation. And it's a tournament bracket that is gonna pit brands in Arkansas against each other, big and small.
All right, so like maybe you could have some different banks competing against each other. You could have some different companies. How are the brackets going to be decided? Is it going to be by categories, or everybody just kind of gets thrown in the mix?
This year, for the first year, I think we'll just throw everybody in the mix and see what happens. We're going to take nominations through the 25th of this month, and then we'll have a pretty scientific process to select them, probably involving a hat.
Or a fishbowl, maybe.
Maybe a fishbowl.
Somebody reaching in.
That might be better.
If you need an independent judge to come in and be that nonpartisan person for you, we'll do that. You mentioned that this idea came from one of your partners, mm-hmm. U.S. SourceLink. Tell me a little bit about what experience they've had in some other states and how this has kind of played out for them.
Kauffman Foundation started U.S. SourceLink as a way to connect entrepreneurs together, essentially online. And typically a SourceLink is a little bit smaller. It's located in a community. It's located in a large, you know, metropolitan area. We're one of the only SourceLinks that is statewide. And what our focus is to provide a platform, a database, that if someone wants to come in and understand any facet of a small business, they can go to one place and find all the resources within the state that can assist them.
All right, so on this Battle of the Brands, let's say you get your 64 in there, and then this round of voting starts up. So mm-hmm. Is it online voting? Is that how does the voting work?
We are having an online vote off of our website. That is going to flow through March just like March Madness does. We'll actually extend one week after from the semifinals to the finals.
So like in the first week, it shrinks from 64
to
32, then down to
16,
Elite Eight.
Exactly.
Your Final Four?
We'll have something. I'm not sure it'll be called the Final Four.
Yeah, they may have a trademark on that. I'm not sure. Are you already getting some entrants?
We are. We've got about 6 entrants right now just here in the first couple of days. And we've actually got a list of suggested companies also that people haven't gotten around to put in there that reaches it up into about 30 at the moment. So we've got big, small, you know, you name it.
Well, tell me what you kind of hope happens from the buzz that gets created around this. Are you just hoping to hype some of these companies in Arkansas that maybe want to raise their name identification? Is it to generate more sales? What's kind of the hope here?
Well, there's really twofold. One is this is the launch for SourceLink right now. We've been working on this tool for a little while. Refining it to the point where we're comfortable putting it on the market, and so it's our launch. And then also from a brand perspective, what SourceLink learned last year was they had approximately 10,000 hits, you know, in a 4-week period over their website of people voting. So a lot of people were seeing those brands, a lot of people were going in and drilling into the detail about the brand, mm-hmm. possibly over to that brand's Facebook page, that brand's website. And we hope the same thing happens here.
All right, so on the link website that you guys have, the SourceLink website that you have, tell me what are some of the things that an entrepreneur or an existing business is gonna find on there that's gonna be a helpful, useful tool mm-hmm. for them?
From a standpoint of SourceLink itself, we start and go from cradle to grave. If you have an idea or want an idea, need to know anything about starting up a franchise, starting up a technology company, anything in between, you can go and topic by topic pull what are the resources available within the state that can support you from a service standpoint. Also, just timely articles and tool sets to do things like find out how much money it might start to take a particular, you know, start up a particular business.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. So the website for the Battle of the Brands mm-hmm. is?
It is www.arksourcelink.com/brands.
All right. So anybody that wants to do it, it's time to get your business branding up there.
Yep. Get them ready. We're waiting for you.
All right. And the winner gets what?
The winner gets to be declared, the
emperor
favorite
of entrepreneurship
brand.
Or something like that.
Yep. Emperor of entrepreneurship sounds good.
Mike Steely with the Arkansas Capital Corporation recently talked with Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas about the Battle of the Brands competition. Nominations for brands to be included in the top 64 bracket are being accepted through Monday. Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at aecc.com.
It is Wednesday, the 20th day of February, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor, Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
It's my mouth moving, but it's Kevin Kinder's voice speaking.
Okay. Kevin, who of course covers music for Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And because I know nothing about music, which we have clearly established over the years, I'm giving you two of his recommendations for tonight. One of them is a musician named Rachel Brooke. She is a country blues singer-songwriter. And she is described as a leading voice in an oft-neglected branch of Americana, Gothic, and insurgent country.
Huh.
She will be performing at 9 o'clock tonight at Chelsea's Corner Cafe in Eureka Springs. The show is free.
Really?
Or there's a hardcore act called Head P.E., parentheses, H-E-D, parentheses, P, period, E, period. Don't ask me why, I don't know. They formed in 1994 in California. They have 8 studio albums, including 2010's Truth Rising. And they will perform at 8 o'clock tomorrow at Rogue on Dixon in Fayetteville. Tickets are $12 in advance at ArkansasLiveMusic.com or $15 at the door.
All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. Hobbs State Park Conservation Area will have a new series of programs titled Birds and Breakfast. You can have a cup of coffee or some orange juice and have breakfast with the birds. It's from 9 until 11 for 4 Saturdays when the University of Arkansas will be catching, banding, measuring, and recording data on the birds and then releasing them back into the wild. Program dates this Saturday, February 23rd, plus March 23rd, April 6th, and May 4th. It's absolutely free. Registration not even required. If you do want more information about breakfast and birds, I'm sorry, birds and breakfast, 789-5000.
The Dig In Food and Farming Festival will take place February 28th through March 2nd at the UA Global Campus on the downtown square in Fayetteville. It will include classes on cooking, organic gardening, food preservation, beekeeping, seed saving, and backyard farming, as well as special nightly selections of documentary films. Author and permaculture designer Brad Lancaster is a specialist in rainwater harvesting landscapes, and he will be the keynote speaker. More information is available at diginfestival.com.
The band Killer Bob incorporated composting into their last tour because they felt so bad about the waste they were creating. That compost eventually became a prop for the musicians, but they're keeping their prop for tonight's performance at Smoke and Barrel in Fayetteville a surprise. During a recent interview with Ozarks at Large's Katie Hendrickson, Killer Bob band members told Katie they want people to know that for them, a performance is much more than just the sonic experience.
Experimental music from Brooklyn comes to Fayetteville tonight. That's in the band Killer Bob, and yes, it is a reference to the cult crime noir series Twin Peaks from David Lynch.
Or what we do has almost nothing to do with Twin Peaks outside of the name. It just serves as a name, just like Scoop is Bank or the Postal Service. And I guess, like, people that are into Twin Peaks might also be into our music.
The members of Killer Bob are Max Jaffe drums, Rob Lundberg bass, Dave Scanlon guitar, and Steven Lugner multi-reedist. Now, I spoke with only three members, Jaffe, Lundberg, and Scanlon. They're the ones on tour this time. They said that Lugner's presence is only digital. The group met while studying at the New School for Jazz and Contemporary Music in Manhattan. The band's press release describes Killer Bob's music as a singular distillation of various strands of experimental music, namely punk, jazz, industrial, and contemporary classical. So how, with so many disparate influences, does a band create a singular sound?
We know when it feels good.
And I also think, for example, the three of us play in a different band called Leverage Models, where we're essentially like the core, like rhythm section-ish, a larger band that's playing very different music, and like we all have played like jazz standards together and all kinds of stuff. So I think there's a certain familiarity there that you know, anything that goes through this vessel comes out like with that kind of sound that you're talking about. It's like of how it happens. If it comes through us, then it is us, even if it's from many disparate parts of music.
Killer Bob's ethos is completely DIY. Their debut release, Fear May Be a Builder, came out on label Primary Records last year, and they're doing their tour completely on their own. This is their fifth tour as Killer Bob, and in the span of less than a month, they're playing shows nearly every night in cities and college towns across the eastern portion of the country. The band says that booking tours this way ends up being more about the people than anything else.
It is all based on knowing people in different places that are also interested in sort of this more creative music world, experimental music, whatever you call it.
It's like more than even just like following a route of cities. It's like following a route of people that you know are supportive of what's going on, and also are kind of taking charge organizationally for a given town. So there's like, you know, the more we do this, the easier it gets, because we know the person in this one given town that's like putting on shows for experimental music, or, each tour gets easier to book, which is promising.
Likely, you've never heard of Killer Bob, and the label experimental sometimes scares folks away. So why come out to Smoke and Barrel on a Wednesday night to experience music you've never heard of?
If you take a chance, you will, whether you like it or dislike it, will remember it for a while.
We play in a lot of different settings and find that people make connections for our music from a lot of different reference point. So I think even though it is likely music that people are unaccustomed to, I think it offers a lot of ways into understanding it from different reference points that people have. So anyone can enjoy.
And also, we just look really sharp.
That's true. We have coordinated costumes for this tour.
The costumes they speak of on this tour are bright primary color coordinated outfits they picked out at a thrift store that sold clothes by the color. For Killer Bob, it's about more than just the sonic creation of music. They've got props too, which they've said will remain a surprise.
I feel like we're really, really thoughtful about all of the music that we're making. So at some point we wanted to be equally thoughtful about all the rest of the aspects of our performance. For example, if anything's going to be said, it needs to be equally thought out as the music would be. We don't want to be only focused on the sonic element when there's so much more going on when you go and see a band play.
I think one of the things that I know I personally got out of being in music school, for example, I mean, you're just surrounded by music all the time, but you're surrounded by performances. You're spending a lot of time just watching ensembles play. So I personally became very hyper-aware of the fact that, you know, I was doing this and I was noticing it with audiences. You listen with your eyes.
You may listen with your eyes to the experimental sounds of Killer Bob tonight at Smoke and Barrel Tavern on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. They're playing along with local bands Egyptor and the Chads. To hear more from the band or to download their music, visit their Bandcamp, www.killerbob.bandcamp.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.
Killer Bob will stop by KUAF for an in-studio performance while they're in town, and you will be able to hear that during an upcoming episode of Ozarks at Large. If you want to hear more from the band now, you can head over to our website, ozarksatlarge.com, for an audio extra. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Our Ozarks at Large food series continues with the item that started it all, the signature cocktail. Ozarks at Large's Christina Thomas went to Smoke and Barrel Tavern in Fayetteville, where bartender Nicholas Claro mixed up this happy hour concoction.
Well, I don't know. I kind of thought of something Southern, so I'm taking kind of a traditional Sazerac and just tweaking it a little by adding some cinnamon and other things, and it's kind of a good wintry drink. And so I thought that would be fitting. I mean, it's based out of, you know, it's a Louisiana cocktail, and I figured, you know, it's a neighbor, so I can borrow it.
What is the Sazerac?
It's a, you know, rye whiskey-based whiskey cocktail. It's kind of similar ingredients to a Manhattan, but kind of constructed a different way. It's, you know, about a cube's worth of sugar, Peychaud's, bitters, touch of water, Sazerac whiskey, and then Herb Saint is what you use to line the glass, and then I'm adding a little bit of cinnamon to it.
I was really excited. I went to Chicago and saw one on a menu someplace. It had absinthe in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what the herb scent is, kind of a in that same vein. Okay. So, cool. Yeah.
All right. So you'll make a cocktail for us?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Do you want me to talk? Well, all right. So first, I'm just going to add about a cube's worth of sugar into a scotch glass. Yeah, so adding Peychaud's to the sugar, which is a more aromatic form of bitters, and then I'm adding a splash of water, and then just kind of swirling that around till most of the sugar has diluted. And then after that, I'm gonna chill the glass, which I'm gonna line with the herb saint. Adding ice and soda water. And then going to use the Sazerac rye. And I'm going to set that aside and grab the chilled glass. And then I'm going to add a few dashes of herb saint and then just line the glass.
Now, it's not very light.
All right. So basically, I'm just going to swirl that around until it is lined enough, and then I'll dump that. And with the strainer, filter the sugar, bitters, water, and whiskey mixture into a glass. And then I will put a lemon twist in it. Along with the dash of a cinnamon schnapps. And you can use that, or you can actually just use fresh cinnamon, or even a cinnamon stick if you want as well. And then, yeah.
Is a dash a technical term?
No, it's just, you know, to taste if you want, but yeah, a few drops here and there.
Lemon twist? What's a twist?
Twist, basically you take the meat off of the lemon wedge and just twist the lemon itself and doesn't really do much, but it looks fancy.
Thank you, Nick. Cheers.
Cheers.
for Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Wayne Bell. Wayne, welcome back.
No, thank you for having me.
In just a few days, the Oscars, the Academy Awards, will be handed out. Lincoln and Argo are the favorites for Best Picture, I take it?
I'm not even sure if Lincoln is, you know, I don't. It's done really well at all these precursors nomination-wise, but then it doesn't really translate outside of, like, Daniel Day-Lewis. So I don't know how that is going to work, and I'm not really sure why that happened. I think it was a few things. I think it was I think a lot of people see it as homework, and they admire it a lot, but they don't love it. And I also think, like, the Academy, or not the Academy, but the people behind Lincoln have been marketing it as, you know, your duty to love this film. And people don't like to be told, you know, that this is the film for your generation. And maybe the best thing that ever happened for Argo, if it does end up winning, is that Ben Affleck wasn't nominated, because they've been able to play that narrative up like I've never seen this year. And Argo... from the Critics' Choice to the BAFTAs to the SAGs to the Golden Globes, it has not lost a thing.
But it's hard to see either of those two not winning. I mean, the other seven nominations for Best Picture are long shots, correct?
Silver Linings Playbook, it did get a lot of acting nominations. It's just really strange, because all these films came out, and at the end, it's kind of Argo, that the one that came out pretty early, that kind of stuck. You had that Zero Dark Thirty controversy. You had people who loved and hated Les Mis. You had people who were really behind Silver Linings and Lincoln. But at the end of the day, you know, Best Picture may be one of the easier races to call.
If history is made in that a favorite, or the favorite for Best Picture, does not have a director's nod, history might also be made if Daniel Day-Lewis wins for his portrayal of Abe Lincoln, third Best Actor statue. He'd be the first to do that.
He would be the first person to win three Best Actor, all in that field. Katharine Hepburn has won four as a female, and there's lots of people who have won three.
Broderick Crawford, all in supporting.
Yeah,
Jack
or
Nicholson,
Meryl Streep. You know, so it could happen, and there's also the possibility. It's rare. You know, I don't know if it's necessarily going to happen, but Robert De Niro could win a third, and Sally Field could win a third. The other races of that are kind of strange. Best Supporting Actor,
all previous winners,
and. They all have big plus and minuses. Alan Arkin is in the Best Picture front runner, Argo. Tommy Lee Jones won SAG for Lincoln. Christoph Waltz won the Golden Globe and BAFTA for Django Unchained. And Philip Seymour Hoffman in The Master won the Critics' Choice. And that's a lead role.
Right.
And then you have Robert De Niro, who hasn't won anything, but he's been nominated a lot, and they're really playing up that narrative that it's been so long since he's won an Oscar. They're kind of avoiding the fact that he hasn't done anything Oscar-worthy in 20-something years, you know, between Meet the Fockers and right. Analyze This. And
that's right.
But they're really playing that up. So, I mean, I could see him. I could see Jones. I could see Waltz winning. And then in Best Actress, all year we've been talking about Jennifer Lawrence, and she did win the SAG, and conventional wisdom would say that she's going to win because she's young and attractive, and they love that. And Jessica Chastain was her big competition, and that film, Zero Dark Thirty, got that whole, you know, negative campaign against it. But I think there's a lot of people who feel like just that Jennifer Lawrence is 22 and a little flip and maybe too young to win Best Actress. And so I kind of think that that's going to come down to the 86-year-old winning for a more, because that's a great narrative. And granted, we don't know much about her, Emmanuel Riva. She's not a star here. But they clearly love that movie. It's in a lot of big categories. But it'll be interesting. I mean, the narrative coming out of it may be that, you know, the film that won Best Picture won a very few amount of awards. Life of Pi, with the technical awards, could be the one that wins the most.
Right.
You know, so it's going to be it's been a strange year the whole year. And we'll, of course, look forward to Seth MacFarlane hosting.
Yeah.
That'll be great. And performances by Adele and Streisand. And they're really lining it up this year. A reunion of the Chicago cast. Right. I mean, it should be interesting to see.
Wayne Bell is our pop culture correspondent for Ozarks at Large.
Another week, another announcement from a senator who won't be running again. This time it's Republican Mike Johanns from Nebraska who's had it with the Hill. And in Illinois, there's a seat to fill as Democratic Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. faces felony charges. I'm Celeste Headlee. Political junkie Ked Rudin returns next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation coming up next here on KUAF 91.3 FM. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Rosetta.
Well done. Where's Rosetta?
Rosetta is in extreme northern Franklin County. It's at the intersection of County Road 5681 and County Road 5680. To help you, it's about equal distance north and south from Limestone and Mount Levi. It's in the National Forest.
You give the best directions.
And I imagine folks in the morning in Rosetta are going to be under a blanket of some sort of wintry precipitation.
I mean, I've been looking at the snow today, and every time I turn around, it's higher than I realized.
Yes. I think one of the least favorable jobs is being a weather forecaster.
Oh, gosh.
Because
if
you don't hit it, the bullseye, people get mad at you and make fun of you. And it's such a wide range of things that can happen. This one, this storm being a grand example. So, weather forecasters, I have your back. I'm on your side.
Excellent. They'll be happy to know this.
Hey, you know what?
What?
I have two tickets to see Hair. I mean, not for me.
Oh.
For someone listening.
Okay, good. And that's for the Friday performance, I believe. Friday night performance.
Yes, at Walton Arts Center. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask a question. You can send your answer to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. And you can be from anywhere because they're going to be at Will Call at Walton Arts Center Friday night.
Right.
So you don't have to get them mailed to you and you don't have to come by here.
Because I think the weather's going to be fine by then, regardless of what happens, right?
I think so, too.
I think so.
All right. So Hair is the title.
Yes.
And I have a hair-inspired question.
Yes, perfect.
Okay. I think the most famous haircut of the 20th century was the one when Elvis went into the Army. He had been this rock and roll icon. The draft was still there for all young men. And so he was drafted. And his what was then long hair was shorn to military length. And young girls saw the pictures in Life magazine and wept. Because Elvis's beautiful mane had been chopped off.
Was it like completely bald?
No, but a crew cut.
Oh, okay.
A short cut. There was still hair, but it was not like what he had been
known for. Mm-hmm.
And so some established people who didn't like rock and roll thought it was great because he was getting discipline or whatever.
Sure.
And many rock and roll fans thought it was horrible.
Oh, right.
The question is, and I know many of you know this, where did that most famous haircut of the 20th century take place?
Excellent. So if you know the answer, give us shoot us an email at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. And you have until tomorrow. So if you don't know, you can look it up.
Right. Or ask your parents. And no matter what the weather does between now and then, we will have the new show tomorrow and we will give the tickets away.
Yep.
Best of luck to you.
Best of luck to everyone.
You and I agree
that
we're fans of summer more than winter.
I am very much a fan of summer more than winter.
But I will tell you that when the snowfall started at the KUAF studios, I don't know, 10 o'clock this morning?
I think about 10.
We both agree this is pretty. Snow, I'm okay with.
Yes, I walked into your office and caught you just staring at it out your window. It's really pretty.
It is. So as long as we keep it at snow, and as long as people everywhere can keep their power and stay safe, I'm okay with winter.
I'm okay with winter as well. I like having all four seasons. As much as I prefer the summer, I do like having all four seasons.
I do too. I don't necessarily need them in one day. but I do like the four seasons. Yes.
Fair enough.
Thing about the winters here is this will be gone in a matter of days.
Oh, sure.
So, all right. But please be careful. And if you're scheduled to do anything, check to make sure it's happening.
Yes.
All right.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Thanks so much for listening and have a happy snow day.